Chapter 14. Respect Me. As I look back at my career with Kalamazoo Public Safety, Lawrence Police Department, and the U.S. Army, I feel so much gratitude toward the many professional public servants I was honored to work with. Since you took the time to read this memoir, I hope you were able to take something from this book, good, bad, or indifferent, and found a place to apply it in your own life to help you become a better cop or just a better human being. Whether you are a citizen, a current or former police officer, a veteran, an aspiring new officer either contemplating entering this noble profession or currently involved in a training program, or a recent graduate pounding the pavement seeking out that perfect job, I would like you to keep one thing in mind. Always have an open mind and be respectful of other people's differences. Let's be honest. We are all human beings, and it's natural for everyone to have some sort of personal bias toward other people, call it bigoted, racist, or some other label. As a police officer, you must be mindful and respectful of every different type of person who walks this wonderful planet of ours. You have to be completely neutral in your opinions, feelings, and beliefs in order to effectively enforce the laws and uphold the Constitution. You cannot allow yourself to be anything but completely open and honest with yourself and others. You should also insist that your coworkers uphold the same values related to personal dignity and respect, because anything else is simply an abuse of the power that you have been entrusted with. If you violate this code of ethics, consider yourself in violation of the oath of office you took when you raised your right hand and had that badge pinned on your chest. In Kalamazoo, I feel that our city and our department evolved over time and improved in the area of respecting others' differences, and it helped to make our agency a more respected and trusted organization. As a police officer and soldier who happens to be gay, perhaps I'm more sensitive to the issues of personal dignity and respect, but I don't think so. This idea is merely opinion on my part. Throughout this book, I never alluded to my sexual orientation. Why not? Because it's irrelevant, just like race, color, religion, national origin, age, sex, pregnancy, citizenship, familial status, disability status, veteran status, or genetic information. One can't deny that the criminal justice profession, like the military, is clearly a heterosexual-dominated profession. However, given that, I feel many members of our society find it necessary to blend their personal lives with their professional lives. I never felt this way, and continue to feel there must be a division between the two worlds. I don't see how one's sexual preference plays any role in one's professional life. There simply is no place for it. What we need to realize, though, is that we must be able to accept people for who they are, not what they are expected to be. I never understood why so many people felt compelled to ask me if I was out at work. What does that mean? And why is it so intriguing? My response to them was very candid. I'm not in or out. I'm just me. My sexuality and personal life has no bearing at my workplace and has nothing to do with how I performed as a police officer or as a soldier, for that matter. Were there moments at work when I felt discriminated against because I am gay? Never. I'm proud to say that I was never personally attacked, intimidated, coerced, pressured, or discriminated against in my professional life. However, I might add that I never advertised myself either. I never hid or lied about who I was as a person. You must always be honest with yourself, or you are simply living a lie. I know there were people I worked with who were not fans of mine, and that's okay. I wasn't at work to gain popularity. I was there to simply do a job. How people felt about me as a person is their business, and I respect their opinions and their personal beliefs. However, when it involved an opinion about Officer Robert Todd Christensen, or the soldier, Drill Sergeant Christensen, nobody, and I mean nobody, ever made a derogatory remark toward me. I never felt uncomfortable in any way. In fact, at Kalamazoo Public Safety, I felt even more comfortable being myself, considering the anti-discrimination policies in place. The city prohibited such hateful behavior among city employees. Our working environment was respectful to people from every walk of life. My point is that I don't want those who have aspirations to become police officers, firefighters, healthcare providers, soldiers, or any other type of public servants to limit themselves with life opportunities or to stop chasing their career goals and dreams simply because they're different from what's perceived as normal or socially acceptable. We are all just people. In fact, many police agencies actively recruit officers who are minority, veterans, and yes, even LGBT officers. The more diverse an agency's ranks are, the better the entire organization will be, and the agency will truly represent the diversity of the communities it is sworn to protect and serve. But Todd, you might say, didn't you have some awkward moments at work? You bet I did. I'll tell you how I dealt with them. In the one instance of derogatory remarks and bigoted comments about gays from my partner, I immediately confronted him. Would it have been easier to simply not say anything and just go along with the situation so as not to create confrontation? It could have been. However, would it have been the right thing to do? Absolutely not. I also saw this same type of positive behavior from one of my most respected supervisors. The situation involved a shift lieutenant telling a joke over the briefing line, which was a speakerphone line linked to all stations. The shift commander used the line to provide the watch list of where officers are to be assigned for the duration of the shift and to give updates on other pertinent information relative to the shift, such as stolen vehicles, runaways, BOLOs, or notices to be on the lookout, officer safety concerns, or training announcements. The briefings took place at shift change twice daily. On one particular evening, the shift lieutenant found it comical to tell an off-the-cuff joke about a person who had to take himself to the emergency room to have an object removed from his rectum. In the course of telling the joke, it was indicated that somehow this medical emergency was related to sexual orientation. Interestingly, the lieutenant telling this joke was a minority also. Of course, the race of the supervisor is irrelevant, but I want you to see that race makes no difference when we are talking about hatefulness and a lack of respect to not only our fellow coworkers, but also our society in general. While we all sat at the briefing table, listening to the joke, I could see the look on my supervisor's face was not good. He was clearly disturbed by the event. As I looked around at my fellow officers at the table, I could also see that they were just as unimpressed. In fact, one of my partners spoke up after the briefing line was disconnected and said to our group of officers, "Did he just really fucking say that?" I just shook my head, got up, and went out to my patrol car. I felt sick to my stomach that someone I had once respected had now lost all of my respect as a human being. The next day, when our shift started and the briefing lines rang, the same shift commander was giving the briefing and started out the briefing with an apology to the entire shift. "I just want to begin with saying that I am sorry for making the joke yesterday at briefing. I was completely out of line and it was inappropriate, as I'm sure I offended some of our members, and I'm sincerely sorry." You know, in our profession we have a saying, once you lose your integrity, you never get it back. Does it matter that he apologized? Not really. It's all well and good to say you're sorry, but the fact of the matter is you said it and you think it. Just like a murder suspect who's being sentenced to life in prison and apologizes for committing murder. That's nice, but you're still a murderer and you're still going to prison. How do we, as police officers, change our negative attitudes of disrespect toward the very people we're supposed to serve and protect? This is clearly a human question we must all address. In 2007, I was mobilized to Fort Benning, Georgia, and served as a senior drill sergeant at 2nd Battalion, 58th Infantry. During basic training, a drill sergeant really does hear it all, and the new soldiers never cease to amaze me with some of the shit they come up with. My fellow drill sergeants know what I mean when I say each of us is a father, brother, satanic devil, God, guardian, protector, mentor, and coach who is hated, loved, and envied. Just about anything you can think of that a drill sergeant is, well, that's what we are to the citizens we are transforming into soldiers. Basic training can be emotionally and physically challenging for everyone at some point during training. But once in a while, we see a soldier really lose it and snap. One such incident took place in the spring of 2008. Let's remember, we were a nation at war in 2008, and my mission was to train and make battle-ready every infantry soldier whom I was honored to instruct. Most of them deployed, many survived, and some were killed. It's called war. It never fails, though. There are some who, in the course of their training, will try to get out of their contract with America and do anything they can to be discharged and sent home. One such incident took place in my platoon. The evening was winding down. The soldiers had eaten dinner and were in the barracks conducting remedial training and engaged in a competition to see who could disassemble, reassemble, and perform a functions check on both the M249 Squad Automatic Weapon, or SAW, and the M240 Bravo machine gun. All the while, I played the Empire Strikes Back theme music. Before the music ended, they were to finish this battle drill. After all the team building was finished and the platoon was sent off for personal time, there was a knock on my office door. "Enter!" I screamed out. In walks this private, head hung low, and I could see that he was starting to cry without even saying a word. "Oh, great," I thought. "This little shit wants to either kill himself or he's homesick." He stood before me, sniffling. "What do you want, private?" I asked. "Drill sergeant, I just can't take it anymore." "Stand up straight and lock it up when you talk to me." I scolded him for losing his military bearing. "Now what's wrong with you?" The tears and sobbing started while this young private went on and on, telling me how he was homesick and afraid to go to war. "Well, welcome to the crowd," I said. "Listen, nobody wants to go to war, private, but sometimes we get to go to war. You should be honored that your country chose you to defend America. Besides, you volunteered, right?" "Well, yes, drill sergeant, but what? We're all going to war anyway. So let's just enjoy life while we can. Now, what's really wrong with you?" "Drill sergeant, I'm just not into it." "Into what? The army or going to combat?" "I just don't think I can do it." "You don't think you can go to war and kill terrorists?" My voice started to get loud as I was trying to think about my next line in an effort to defeat his negative thought process and convince him he was part of something bigger than himself. I knew that this could be a defining moment in his life and that it could set the stage for success or failure in his future. I knew that it could be something from his past that had gotten into his head to convince him that he should simply give up and quit. "Drill Sergeant, my girlfriend is cheating on me, and I want to go home." "You can't go home," I responded. "Well, I don't want to die." "Aha! So she's not cheating on you then, right?" "Well, no, I mean, Drill Sergeant, I just want out."
"Out of the army, private?"
"Yeah."
"You mean, yes, Drill Sergeant?" I barked back at him.
"Yes, Drill Sergeant," he said, with his head held high, tears running down his face.
"Sorry, private. You're staying, and you're going to fucking war with the rest of us."
"Well, then, I'm gay," he said.
Keep in mind, he just broke military policy, and by all rights, I could have simply kicked his weak ass out of the army for violating the don't ask, don't tell policy, for which many new soldiers had been released previously.
"Oh, really?" I said. "Hold up your right hand and point your finger in the air."
He hesitated.
"Do it."
As he stood there, with his right arm extended, hand in the air, finger pointing to the sky, I said,
"Do this."
I held my own finger up in the air and simulated pulling a trigger with my forefinger. The private did exactly what I was doing and bent his finger just fine.
"See? Your trigger finger still works, doesn't it? I don't give a shit if you're gay or straight. You can shoot, so you're not going anywhere. Get the fuck out of my office."
He dropped his head, turned around, and tried to walk out. Stop right there. Get back here and do an about-face. He returned to his position, locked it up to attention, executed his about-face properly, and took 3 steps toward the closed door.
Hold it, I yelled.
Private, I want you to get a piece of paper and write down everything you can think of that's bothering you, and you bring that to me in the morning, and I mean everything. Fill up both sides and use more than one. I want to know everything that's on your mind. Give that to me after breakfast.
I had to be tough on him. I could not just let him quit on himself. And I didn't want him to think he could just get out of a contract with Uncle Sam so easily. Besides that, I really wanted to know how to help him. I didn't want him to give up on himself. I couldn't give a shit about sending him off to combat. But I wanted him to learn that he could solve a problem when faced with adversity, regardless of how hard he thought life was. This young soldier never quit, and he ended up staying in the Army and graduating from basic training, infantry training, and airborne school. At graduation, he thanked me for not letting him quit. Success! I don't know what happened to him after that. I just hope that a life lesson was learned, regardless of whether or not he was gay or straight. As I said before, it's irrelevant. It's simply about being human. Perhaps, too, those who have taken to heart what I took the time to say about myself and my coworkers will have a renewed understanding of what it really means to respect other people. In no way am I trying to push my beliefs on anyone. However, surely we can all agree that opening up the lines of communication and having a conversation about the issues that face our society will only result in a better understanding of each other. Such communication will help from a sense of mutual respect and understanding toward those that are different. I mean, after all, isn't that part of what being a police officer is all about? I'm sure that even some people who know me and are reading this book are telling themselves, "My God, I had no idea he was gay." Well, as you say this to yourself, then ask this question. Does it really matter? I think that we should simply realize that people come in all different types. Even if they are not stereotypical of what you perceive to be reality, it really makes no difference, right? A wonderful person in my life once told me that your real friends are those who know all about you and are still your friends. Everyone else, well, I guess they weren't really your friends. Throughout the course of my police and military career, it wasn't my intent to make new friends. I was there to work, and my job was to be a cop or a soldier and to serve my community and my country.